Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away. Hello, thank you so much for joining Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am your host, Dr. Michael Karlfeldt. I've been in clinical practice since 1987. I've seen pretty much everything under the sun. I worked with so many different Lyme patients, and I know what a devastating disease this is. That's why I'm doing this podcast, to make sure that you are armed with the information that you need in order to be able to be successful in your struggle with Lyme. We'll be featuring authors, doctors, professors, and also people like yourself that have gone through the journey that you're going through, that have been where you've been and is now on the other side, and they get to tell their victorious story as to how they battle Lyme so that you can implement that in your life as well. Be sure to like us and write a review on whichever platform that you're listening on. What that does is it enables other people to see us more so that they have access to this information as well. So I'm so excited that you're tuning in, and get ready for this upcoming show. It is going to be amazing. Well, I am so excited to have Dr. Bill Rawls here on Integrative Lyme Solution with Dr. Karlfeldt. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you. My pleasure. Always.
I know we had prior conversations, I love where you take these conversations in regard to how to address infectious agents and where to look, rather than kind of the conventional thinking just to kill the bug, So I really love that. But if you don't mind, kind of giving a kind of a brief story again. I mean, why, as a conventional doctor, are you in this position focusing on Lyme?
Ooh. Yeah, that's always, we all have a story, and it is interesting. This year, 2020, marks some big milestones for me. I have been a physician for 40 years. I graduated in 1985. And the other milestone is it's been 20 years since I marked the turning point of when I started crawling out of the hole from chronic Lyme disease. And that's the point I embraced herbal therapy and natural therapy, and it totally changed my life. So it's kind of like part one and part two of my career, and they've all been interesting. So the first part was OBGYN. I went into it because, quite frankly, I was a bit taken aback by treatment of chronic illness with medical therapies. It was pretty obvious. People didn't get well. They just stayed alive. And so I gravitated towards something that brought life into the world, that was energizing, that was dealing mainly with healthy patients. And when you did interventions, like, removing a tubal pregnancy or turning a baby in utero, things like that, they really made a difference. And it was really cool. The downside, though, is it came with call, obligation to the hospital, to labor and delivery and the emergency room, 24-hour call, plus working in the office during the day, every second to third day, every second to third weekend. And when I was in my 30s, I could do that and just push through and not sleep. But by the end of my 40s, it started catching up with me. And I just started to crash. I lost the ability to sleep and catch up even when I wasn't on call. So I was in this state of just chronically not sleeping, and my whole body started falling apart, forced me to stop doing obstetrics. I opened a primary care office that eventually became more kind of like a naturopath's office before it was all over. And gradually got my health back. But along the way, learned a lot of things. And in the process, my body was falling apart. And despite giving up call, I still I wasn't sleeping and I had heart symptoms, neurological symptoms, gut symptoms, everything, and kept going like, why am I not getting better? What's going on? And kept looking for answers and thinking there's got to be a microbe or something. Tested for Lyme disease. It was negative initially. Later, I found out it was carrying those microbes, the bacteria. But the thing is, I didn't get them from a tick bite at that time. I probably picked them up when I was a kid, and they had been in my system for all that time. And that was a big eye-opener, realizing that these things can stay dormant in your system, inside your cells. And it's not just Borrelia, the Lyme bacteria, it's dozens and dozens of other potential microbes that act just like them, that we pick up through life, that can become dormant in our system and later reactivate when we're stressed, when we don't sleep, when we don't eat right, when we all these things are happening to us. And that's basically not just what chronic Lyme is. I've come to appreciate that's what all of chronic illness is. So it really took me to a very different place. And as a solution, obviously changing my lifestyle, but herbal therapy was my salvation. And that was a real revolution that just totally changed my life forever. So I've been working that equation, studying it, figuring it out, searching for evidence, trying to get to answers to put a bigger picture together. And where I am now is so different than the conventional medical world. But I have the science to back it up, and I'm realizing they're not looking at that science because it's inconvenient and they don't really want to. So it's an interesting life for sure.
So with and because I love that concept, because we all deal with infectious agents. We're exposed to things all the time, and there's always the question, why does one get Lyme disease versus another? Both of them can have Borrelia, both of them can have Bartonella in them, but why does one get so symptomatic? I mean, like you were saying, in your case, you probably had it as a child, and then you had these life events. So what is it that happens in an individual like you that all of a sudden start to express Lyme?
I've literally talked to hundreds, probably even thousands of people who identify with chronic Lyme. And interestingly, I would say 90 to 95% of them do not remember getting sick around the time of a tick bite. Many of them don't even remember the tick bite. But when you go back, and this is where my practice evolved to be different. So much of Lyme testing, functional medicine is about testing, 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 testing. And what the tests tell us is what kind of dysfunction is going on inside the body at this particular moment, or what kind of microbes are active at this particular moment. But what it doesn't tell us is why the person became sick. So all of my encounters, many of them, I had a practice for years and then went to online work, and I would spend an hour or more with a patient. No doctors take the time to do that. Just really piecing it back, sometimes all the way back to childhood, piecing together, and a lot of it was my own curiosity. What makes this person sick? And you could always piece together the factors that came together, dietary, toxic substances there in their environment, mental factors, stress, sleep. And the micro factor was there, but it wasn't generally the precipitating factor. Now, the small percentage of people that did get sick around the tick bite, typically you could tell got a big load of microbes, like that story of the person that said, yeah, I was in the woods and I came out of the woods through the bushes. And the next several days, I was picking ticks off of me by the hundreds, It's like they got an enormous load of a wide variety of microbes. That's a factor. And so piecing together the factors I think sometimes it's the microbes, but usually it's other factors that come together. The microbes were already there, and they had been there. But these other things gradually precipitated things that ended up with this system that the microbes are reactivating, breaking down tissues, and causing sickness.
Hello, dear listeners. This is Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, your host of Integrative Lyme Solutions. Today, I'm excited to share an exclusive opportunity from the Karlfeldt Center, where we blend healing power of nature with groundbreaking therapies to combat Lyme disease and its associated challenges. At the Karlfeldt Center, we're not just fighting Lyme, we're revolutionizing the way it's treated with cutting-edge therapies like photodynamic therapy, full-body ozone IV therapy, silver IVs, brain rebalancing, autonomic response testing, laser energetic detoxification, and more. We aim to eradicate Lyme. Our approach is comprehensive, supporting your body's immune system, detoxification processes, hormonal balance, and mitochondrial health, ensuring a holistic path to recovery. Understanding Lyme disease and its impact is complex, which is why we're offering a free 15-minute discovery call with one of our Lyme-literate naturopathic doctors. This call is your first step towards understanding how we can personalize your healing journey, focusing on you as a whole person, not just your symptoms. Our team, led by myself, Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, is here to guide you through your recovery with the most advanced diagnostic tools, individualized treatment plans, and supportive therapies designed to restore your health and vitality. Whether you're facing Lyme disease head-on or seeking preventative strategies, we're committed to your wellness. Take the first step towards reclaiming your health. Visit us at thekarlfeldtcenter.com or call us at 208-338-8902 to schedule your free discovery call. At the Karlfeldt Center, we believe in healing naturally, effectively, and holistically. Thank you for tuning in into Integrative Lyme Solution with Dr. Karlfeldt. Remember, true health is not just the absence of disease, it's achieving the abundance of vitality. Let's discover yours together. And you talk a lot about intracellular, microbes and how they get reactivated. And that essentially, it sounds like, you have the microbes that are within the cells. And then all of a sudden, there can be toxic exposures, there can be life events, it can be nutritional deficiencies, it can be a variety of different things. And then these microbes then get reactivated.
That's right. And it happens with a lot of microbes and some that we don't even suspect. But I've documented this with Bartonella, Babesia, Anaplasma, Rickettsia, Chlamydia, Mycoplasma. So the list just goes on and on. And then there are the viruses and Babesia, Toxoplasma. All of these things can become dormant inside our cells. So it's a defense mechanism or a survival mechanism that these microbes aren't necessarily, their goal isn't making us sick. Basically, they want a platform to reproduce and then spread to other hosts. Mm-hmm. So if they're making the host really sick, then that's going to limit their opportunities to spread, because that person isn't going to be out in the woods taking walks and things like that. So, or whatever host they might pick. So the strategy is basically to have a presence. So when that tick bites us and injects not just Borrelia, but probably a lot of other different kinds of bacteria and other microbes into our system, they're not aggressively trying to overtake the body. They're trying to get through the bloodstream and clear as fast as they can because the immune system is hot on their tail. And if they can penetrate into a cell, they get protection. Now, if that cell is healthy, that's not a favorable environment for growth because our cells have mechanisms of repelling microbes. That process we talk about called it's autophagy, that our cells are renewing themselves. It's also a mechanism by which the cell can expel microbes. So if that cell is healthy and it's an unfavorable environment, they can basically just wall themselves off and go into a dormant state and stay that way. And this has been documented for a lot of things. So interestingly, I'm sure you treat pandas in your practice, right? So pandas is associated with group B strep, and it's nobody can figure it out because we know it's connected to strep. Kids have a strep infection, but then they're treated with antibiotics. The strep goes away, but then they have all these neurological symptoms, behavioral manifestations, other things going on, and antibiotics don't seem to work anymore. And it's kind of like, is it the strep? Is it something else? I found a paper that documented that Streptococcus, Strep pyogenes, one of the ones that can show up, has the ability to invade cells and go dormant for months at a time. And it does another thing. It invades white blood cells, and it can stay dormant there or travel. So it's something called a Trojan horse mechanism. And this has been documented for SARS virus that causes COVID, Borrelia, all the Lyme bacteria. Plus, now this strep, they documented that it can enter the white blood cell and use that to cross through the blood-brain barrier into the brain and then deposit into brain cells and go dormant and hang out. And then when conditions were favorable, pop back out again. And it just perfectly explained what we're dealing with pandas. But when you look at microbes in that state, bacteria and other microbes, they're very slow growing. They can be dormant and then reactivate. And so antibiotics just aren't going to be a solution, because if you're using, so it takes long-term suppression, months, years of suppression. If you're doing that with antibiotics, you disrupt gut flora. That causes a range of problems. You generate antibiotic-resistant pathogens, and it's toxic to cells. Herbs with antimicrobial properties don't do that. So you can take herbs for a long time and keep these things suppressed. And it takes a long time, if ever, you can eliminate all the dormant microbes that are there, all the dormant cells that are harboring dormant microbes. I don't know if you can do that. I've been doing this 20 years. I've been healthy a long time. I still take my herbs every day. I don't take that risk. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you can eliminate that, but you can eliminate the active ones and keep them suppressed with herbs. And you can't do that with antibiotics. So it's really a very elegant solution.
So essentially, what are you, because a lot of people, they obviously do that antibiotic treatment. I mean, what in your mind are they accomplishing? It seems to me that they're kind of killing off some of the acute aspect, but then all the dormant, they hide even deeper, I would assume. And then you have a weaker system, to right. battle whenever they wake up.
Exactly. I mean, exactly.
So what do you feel is accomplished when a person takes antibiotic? I mean, what is happening?
I think the CDC recommendations for antibiotics if someone is symptomatic after a tick bite are reasonable, especially because Rocky Mountain spotted fever can make someone really sick. Mm-hmm. At that point in time, the bacteria are coursing through the bloodstream. They're exposed. They're more vulnerable. So antibiotics are going to have more an effect. I don't think they ever eliminate them completely, but they knock it down so the immune system can do a better job of cleaning it up. After that point, after the infection, weeks later, months later, years later, I don't think antibiotics have a place, because these things are well seated inside, dormant inside cells throughout our body, and are reactivating, and they're really growing slow. Antibiotics work for fast-growing bacteria. So you get a pneumococcal pneumonia in your lungs, those pneumococcal bacteria are turning over every 20 minutes. So somebody can get sick really fast. But Borrelia, it turns over, its doubling time is 12 to 24 hours. That's really slow. And antibiotics to work well depend on fast growth. So right from the get-go, you're not going to do as good a job with that kind of bacteria. Plus, if they're in a dormant state inside cells, you're not going to touch them at all. But the problem with that long-term antibiotic use is disrupting gut flora. But I'm recognizing that even a bigger problem is generating antibiotic-resistant pathogens. So we talk a lot about Lyme disease, and hundreds of thousands, millions of people are being affected by chronic Lyme disease, but they're not dying by the millions. And people are dying by the millions from exposure to antibiotic-resistant pathogens. Over 1 million people die every year because of antibiotic-resistant pathogens. And that in itself is a reason to use our antibiotics very discriminately. We're not making any new antibiotics. The last new antibiotics were made in 1985 when I graduated from medical school 40 years ago, because it takes a lot of money to bring a drug to market. So the drug companies are focusing on things that people use chronically, or that they can use over and over again, like a vaccine. Where antibiotics, there's not enough money in it to create new things. So they're antibiotic-resistant pathogens to everything out there, every single antibiotic. So we really need to be using those things very discriminately. Herbs don't have that penalty, so they are a much wiser choice. So I wouldn't say that there's never an indication for an antibiotic and chronic Lyme disease, because I don't want to be backed in a corner on anything. I always want to keep my options open, but why would we not start with the herbs first and go just as far as we can, because it makes so much sense.
So in addition to obviously, looking at the danger of getting, bacteria or antibiotic resistant bacteria, and then putting a person in a very vulnerable position because now there are no antibiotic tools, in case something bad was going to happen, and then also the impact that has on the gut. What are the differences? I mean, when you use an herbal antibacterial, or that, I mean, how is that functioning different in the system than the antibiotic, and why is that better, other than that we don't develop a resistance to it?
It's always an interesting discussion. All antibiotics originated from a natural source. Every single one of them. Either a bacteria, a fungus, or a plant. And a lot of them come from funguses, because bacteria are fungus's arch enemy. Penicillin came from a fungus. But bacteria have to protect themselves from other bacteria too. And plants also have to protect their cells from bacteria, viruses, protozoa, yeast. So all living organisms have to have a defense system against microbes. To survive, it's just you have to have that. Now we have a cellular system. Other organisms, fungi, bacteria, plants, have a chemical system. But it's a system. It's not one chemical, it's hundreds and hundreds of chemicals. So when we go to build a new antibiotic, I used to have this idea that really smart people were sitting in a lab and building antibiotics to work. And we're just not that smart. So basically what we do is we go to another organism. The big one was penicillin, from penicillium molt, and we pluck a chemical. Why do we only get one chemical? And we try to get the most active chemical. Two reasons. One, we're not smart enough to produce that organism's whole system. And two, you can't patent anything natural. So you have to take that one chemical and then change it, modify it chemically, so you can get a patent on it, so you can make some money. So it's one chemical, not a defense system. It's one random chemical. And bacteria are just viruses, protozoa, everything are just really good at evolving around that one chemical and becoming resistant to it. But when you take an herb or a medicinal mushroom, you're getting the plant or that medicinal mushroom entire system, not one chemical, hundreds, even thousands of chemicals. And so there's some intelligence built into that it's selective for pathogens. And this has been documented by science. I found a study that documented this exact thing. It's selective for pathogens, but doesn't affect normal flora. So we can take these things and it won't disrupt our gut and skin microbiome. In fact, a lot of herbs will actually balance your skin and gut microbiome because it's suppressing pathogens in those places. Resistance doesn't occur to a whole system like that. And that system also has other built-in cellular protectants, protectants against free radicals, toxic substances, radiation, and some of the regulatory chemicals that can help balance our stress hormones and do a lot of other things for us. So you're getting so much more in an herb. It's so much more comprehensive than what you get with a drug with that single chemical. And it's really fascinating. I mean, we really should be, instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, we should be using and optimizing these tools that we already have. They're right at our fingertips and have served us well for so long.
And are there favorite ones that you have kind of in the herbal kingdom that you keep kind of going back to and when dealing with patients battling Lyme?
You know, we have select ones that we generally start with, and that comes from just people using them and then science taking a look at them. And the person that probably started the ball rolling was Stephen Booner, who passed away several years ago, but he wrote a book. I read that book and it really changed my life. He wrote a book called Healing Lyme that was published in 2005 that put forward an herbal protocol and had some good sound science about certain herbs. And that became a foundation. He wrote several more books, researched a lot of other herbs. That became a foundation. And, you know, we've kind of found, well, some of those things were a little better than others. We've added to it over the years. But there's kind of a core protocol of Japanese knotweed, Chinese skullcap, Andrographis, cat's claw, cryptolepis. That was a newer one. And then complementing it with immune modulating adaptogens like reishi and cordyceps. So that's kind of a nice core to start with. And it's really familiarity. You know, we've used these herbs a lot. There's some good science. I mean, Johns Hopkins and other really top institutions have taken a look at these things and found they actually kill Borrelia as well as antibiotics do. So they really do have some good science behind them now. But say you told me, you know, tomorrow, you just can't get those herbs anymore. You just can't get them. There's a whole nother set that I have, and another one after that, and another one after that. So the fact of the matter is, if you study an herb, you will find that it does have antimicrobial properties. All they all have to. It's part of it. And if you're getting a full herb spectrum, you're getting some antimicrobial properties. Now we know that certain herbs, certain plants, because of their environment, you know, there might be an environment that has higher microbe stress or stress from certain microbes or the others. So you get some selectivity with certain herbs. We know that our herbs from warmer environments like Africa and the Amazon have really good antimicrobial properties. Well, you'd expect that with a a warm, moist environment that has a lot of microbes in it. Whereas something like rhodiola, which is a wonderful adaptogen from Siberia, is great for adapting to physical stress, but there's not a lot of microbe stress there, so it's not quite as good an antimicrobial as some others. But the Amazonian herbs, a lot of herbs from Africa and South America are just exceptionally good. Not to say that there aren't some really nice ones throughout North America and Europe too, though.
And does it tend to be a benefit? It sounds like then to choose herbs, that are grown in a region where these microbes are in high concentration. Like you're mentioning the Amazon jungle, where you have a lot of microbes, a lot of antibacterial. But is it also benefit, to kind of isolate and see, well, there's a lot of lime in this region, so the herbs and plants that grow in that region, probably will have more defense mechanisms.
I definitely would say that our warmer regions of the world are going to have stronger antimicrobial herbs, but not necessarily as specific for Borrelia. I mean, this evolution process has been going on for a very, very long time, and where we have high concentrations of Borrelia now may not have been the case
No.
10,000 years ago. So Borrelia gets around. I mean, it's been found from the tropics to the Arctic Circle. It's very interesting. You know, when I was researching one of the books I wrote, I found a study that they were able to find. They took amber found in the Dominican Republic that they had ticks in and found Borrelia inside those ticks. That's an island in the Caribbean, all right? But they've also been found all the way to the Arctic Circle. So it's not specific, and I think part of that is because these plants have been present in different environments and spread around the world. And this has been going on for a long, long time.
And just like pathogens or bugs, plants, they share intelligence. So they will then,
Absolutely.
one plant is exposed to a certain pathogen, that intelligence that gets given to the other plants around, and so they all develop, to build up that immune system.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and what's fascinating with plant also, I mean, with antibiotic, you have, this antibiotic for this pathogen, but with plants, they bleed into, they hit such a wide spectrum of different pathogens. Like if you are dealing with mold and you're dealing with some parasites that come along with it,
Yeah.
maybe some viral, you have it's that full spectrum. Like you said, you come with a whole system when you take a plant.
Yeah. The other nice thing about herbs is you can combine a bunch of herbs, right? So historically, dating back to traditional forms of herbalism, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, European, North American, wherever you go, they use formulas. It wasn't ever one herb. It was anywhere from a half dozen to a dozen different herbs that complement one another. And we found that to be true. They're very useful too, in treating Lyme disease or anything else, because, as much as we do know and can test for, there are always things that are potentially there that we just don't have tests for. So we don't always know what is inside a person's body. This idea that we have dormant microbes is inside of our tissues. It's a new science, and the more we look, the more we find of different kinds of things. Things actually cross over from our gut and skin, end up in our bloodstream, and end up in our tissues and our brain throughout. So it's not just things you've picked up from the outside, it's things that are inside of you are constantly crossing over. And our tissues are, it's kind of more like a freeway than a sterile environment. So the herbs give us the ability to combine different herbs to compound that or synergize those benefits and cross benefits between different plants. Can't really do that with most drugs, even antibiotics, because the more drugs you add in, you tend to synergize or compound the side effects instead of the benefits. And so we just can't do that with drug therapies. When they try, it just makes people sick. Triple antibiotic therapy, that's some toxic stuff. And yeah, triple or quadruple or beyond with herbal therapy, well, yeah, that's kind of how we do it because that's what works.
And so from your viewpoint, I mean, it almost sounds like knowing which bug it is not as important as optimizing cellular function.
I, I always wrestle with that because in our allopathic medical world, in our conventional world, we deal with specifics and we've trained people to think in specifics. And it works where conventional medicine works well. And that's acute intervention with very specific problems. And in the beginning, I talked about my field of obstetrics. I could do tests to find that when somebody had right lower quadrant pain and a positive pregnancy test, I could do a sonogram and then a laparoscopy and test and find they had a pregnancy in their tube, and I could excise that and save their life. And so there are a lot of problems like that, but that acute intervention is for very specific targeted intervention. So when you move into chronic illness of any kind, it's not one thing, it's everything in the body breaking down all at once. And we lose sight of the factors that are driving it. I mean, I was reviewing a paper on multiple sclerosis and reviewing the drugs. And multiple sclerosis is demyelination of nerves. So there's a cell called an oligodendrocyte that wraps around our cells, and it has a substance called myelin, and it acts kind of like the plastic on a copper wire, so that when our nerves are put together, they don't short out. It's really important. So what happens in MS is our body starts attacking that. So instead of asking, why is the body attacking its nerves? We just build drugs to try to block that from happening. And they don't work and they have terrible side effects and people don't get well. But when you start asking, well, what causes MS? You find dietary factors, toxic factors, stress factors, sedentary lifestyle, and microbes, including Borrelia, chlamydia, mycoplasma, Epstein-Barr, HHV6, and others who all scavenge myelin from these nerves. And so you start thinking about it and go, okay, maybe these microbes are invading the body at a point in time and invading those cells, but going dormant. But then that person has all these stress factors come together and they reactivate and start breaking down the cells. Well, they're emerging from cells. So the body sees that and goes, oh, we can't have that. So they start attacking the cells where the microbes are emerging. Perfect explanation for MS. So the solution isn't necessarily just blocking the ability of the immune system's assault on the myelin. It's how do we sort this out that we calm this microbe stress and restore cellular wellness so the body can take care of itself? And there's so many cases of people who have done that and gone into remission just fine, and they don't need the drugs anymore. And but when you look at Lyme disease, a lot of people with neurological symptoms are found to have demyelination, and they have Borrelia, and they have mycoplasma and chlamydia and these other microbes too. So why do some people get MS and some people don't? I found that there are people who have MS are carrying certain genetic mutations. And that's probably the difference that causes them to progress a little faster than other people. But the causes are the same. So it's not surprising you change their lifestyle, get them on a decent diet, get them sleeping, calm their sympathetic overactivity, get them on herbs. A lot of them do great.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it's essentially the key becomes, and you have that bucket effect. You have all these things that fill up that bucket to make you symptomatic. So if you can just start to kind of clean up what's in there and then fuel the cells with what they need, then you'll have, like you talked earlier about the cells and have their natural defense mechanism, you know, the phagocytosis that, you know, where they are then able to kind of repel the pathogens.
Right.
Yeah. And you have, I mean, you do so much. I mean, you meet people, you know, one-on-one, and you've written a lot of books, you get articles, but you've also just recently launched a kind of a 6-month program for people, because there's so many people out there struggling and they have a hard time finding help, you know, in the way, because there's a lot of doctors that just aren't educated. And then to be able to have something like this alongside with, so you created this 6-month program. Do you mind talking a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, about 10 years ago, when I was still in my office practice, I realized that it was just really hard to find good products. And at that point in time, I found that I could have products made to my specifications. And I learned where to get good quality extracts. And so I created products that eventually became a company that my daughter came on board to run. So for years, we've been putting together herbal protocols for people. And, you know, so part of that is the herbs that I just talked about. But what I found over the years is that people also need a lot of support in making the changes that they need to make, you know, dietary changes, getting their gut back again, getting their body detoxifying again. But everybody seems to be in a state of just total turmoil with sympathetic overactivity, that fight or flight response. So a lot of times their body just isn't ready for the herbs. And we found that going through phases is so valuable. So in the beginning, we start people off with cellular support, with nutrients, and other support like glutathione, and a combination of ashwagandha and calming herbs just to calm that sympathetic overactivity, teach them some relaxation techniques, some qigong, relaxing yoga, and you know, put them in a different place. And I found that you really need to do that before you really get into detoxification and restoring gut function. For the micro part, instead of hitting them with the big guns, those really heavy herbs, we start with a milder formula that they gradually bring on board. And at the same time, we created a community that, instead of like being on Facebook, we had a Facebook group, but you just can't control Facebook. So we created a community inside something called Mighty Networks that gives us ability to control the conversation. So it's there for people to get their questions answered. I'm in there all the time. And I'm creating a database of just information that, you know, troubleshooting how to get best use out of your healthcare provider. All of those things. So we've just built an enormous database for people to pull from to answer questions. And we carry them through this gradual 6-month process. Finally, in the last 2 months, getting to those big guns and really taking on the microbes but we found that people who go through that pathway have a better response. And part of this is, you know, people don't have access to the kind of medical care that you offer as a naturopath. I mean, to me, naturopaths are really offering the ideal kind of care. There's just not enough of you. And, you know, when you exclude Lyme doctors who are using big gun antibiotics, and you look at what's available in the conventional medical system and how expensive functional medicine is with all the lab testing, much of it in unnecessary. People don't have the resources they need. So what we're trying to do is create a place where they can get questions answered, that it's not a replacement for a provider. It helps them to be better patients and get better use out of the resources that they have at their disposal. So this is like a 5-year project that's coming finally together, and we're really excited about it. We've called it Restore 180. And again, it's not to replace providers, it's to complement providers so people have a more comprehensive experience, and so they can get that better pathway. They're stumbling less, they're making forward progress more. And that's what it's all about.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, and where can they go to? Where's the website where they can go and learn more about this?
Yeah, our website is vitalplan.com. And I have a website called RawlsMD that is just mainly informational. We're actually doing some work to redo that right now. But the Restore 180 program is this. We've had this kit of supplements called the Restore Kit for years, and this is taking that and just expanding it. It's just this huge evolution of it. It's not just me. I've got a team of great people working with me, and we're pretty excited about it. I think it's going to fill a void for a lot of people.
I love it. Well, Dr. Rawls, it's always a pleasure. And thank you so much for you doing what you're doing for people that are really looking hard for solutions and not finding it, and really kind of guiding them along. Yeah. So thank you so much for all of this.
My pleasure, and thank you for everything that you do. It's just so important to get a different message out there. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com, and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors on Facebook. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.